Hello, friends. Welcome to Mostly Harmless. I'm your host, Dammit Damien. Buddies, welcome back. We're back this week with a really great chat with my new best friend forever, Mr. Nick Faber. And of course, my good old friend, Scotty Sandwich. The two of them make up the brainchilds behind Worthington's Law, a creative music writing outlet for Nick during the pandemic, which turned full-on band when Scotty Sandwich came on board to help make Nick's vision a reality. This conversation is really about making art, finding adult friends, having fun, and finding a creative outlet in your 40s. I just turned 41. This episode's got a lot of really, really great stuff that is really going to help me in this next year pursue these wild and crazy creative outlets that I have. It's great that even though they live on another coast, to have these great encouraging friends in my life to help push me in my own stupidity of needing to do all this creative stuff that brings in absolutely no money. And it's just fun, and I just love it. I've known Scotty for years. I first met Scotty way back in 2013 when I was tour managing Artless Nancy from Fort Collins, Colorado. Scotty was the founder of Death to False Hope Records. Artless Nancy were playing the Death to False Hope Fest number 3 in 2013. We pulled up to Motor Co. in Durham, North Carolina, and I was greeted by Scotty with a giant bear hug and a natty boa, and we've been best friends ever since. Okay, maybe not best friends, but we've been good internet acquaintances who run into each other time to time in other cities at concerts. He's gone from running Death to False Hope Records and become a pretty in-demand record producer, making records for guys like The Slow Death, Mikey Erg, Raging Nathans, so many more. He's just a really damn good guy and has been really, really, really greatly appreciative of all my work over the years. And if you haven't checked out Scotty's band, Almost People, you should. I don't think they are together anymore, and that's a damn shame. They're a really great three-piece punk rock that feels like it was zapped straight out of Chicago in the early 2000s. Lots of woes, lots of harmonies, lots of really, really, really tight professional musicianship. I don't know. I've been writing about music my whole entire life, and I still don't know how to describe something I love. But whenever I play Almost People, I'm always just like so full of joy. It is really great. Didn't really get a lot of press like it should have. So please go check out Almost People once you're done checking out Worthington's Law. This episode should have been up a couple months ago, but as we talk about in this episode, I moved to Napa, California earlier in the year. I'm working 2.5 jobs. I'm working 6 days a week, and I've just been exhausted all the time. But yesterday I had the day off, and I was like, I want to work on things. I want to put something together. So we edited this episode together. It's going to go up. We're going to have a couple more episodes coming up in the weeks to come. This is just a really fun chat about getting older and then still finding those creative outlets and tendencies. And I really did learn a lot from today's episode talking with Nick. And Nick, just be prepared, buddy. Like, there's going to be a lot of late night drunken text messages from me going like, am I doing something stupid by continuing all this shit? Of course, the answer is yes, but we wouldn't have it any other way, buddies. So, all right, let's go ahead and get this episode started. We're gonna open this up with a track from Worthington Law's first EP. This is a song we talk about early on in the episode and a way of life for myself now these days. The song is called Hyper and High. It's about drinking coffee and getting stoned. Oh, and also at the very end of the episode, keep listening for a drunken Scotty Sandwich trying to figure out how to do improv on Zoom with Nick and I. It's pretty silly. Nick does a really great job of teaching us what's going on, but as you'll hear throughout the episode, Scotty progressively gets drunker and drunker and drunker. There's a lot of yelling and bad mics from Scotty, but that only plays into the ridiculousness of it all. So, all right, buddies, let's listen to Hyper and High, and let's hear that conversation.
Hyper and high, hyper and high, hyper and high. 6 a.m. I gotta get my me time in. Coffee waiting, freshly brewed. Time to elevate my mood. I turn that cosmic energy into productivity. These intentions work for me. I'll even vape some CBD.
Guys, well, let's jump in there. Let's get started.
This is Nick. Hello.
Hi, Nick.
I'm Scotty. I'll be the one that sounds drunk and yelling at a dog the whole time.
Are you drinking already?
I've been drinking since fucking noon.
Well, so for me, it is noon. In honor of the Worthington Law song "Hyper and High," I have been chugging coffee. When I finish this, nice. I'll finish like eight cups. I also hit my pipe a couple times before sitting down, and I've never like really openly done that in a chat before, so we'll see how this goes.
Well, in all fairness, I do drink the adult seed balls, which are monster coffee energy drinks and vodka. So
God, that sounds terrible.
And I was gonna say I just drank a monster iced tea, and I've been hitting my little vape here, so I think we're all good.
Hell yeah.
So. It's really tasty. It just tastes like a White Russian.
All right. I'll have to take your word on that. I don't know if I'm ready to dig in to that concoction just yet, but I still like my over caloried craft beer. I got a couple in the fridge. I'll drink and toast to you when this is done. But so Nick, what'd you get into today?
So I have the luxury of working from home.
What do you do? I have no idea what you do.
Yeah. So I work on website projects. My role is called business systems analyst, but it's kind of more of a producer kind of role where I just kind of help make sure people have what they need to build websites for big companies. I have a lot of downtime. It's kind of like built into the job. And so I always have my, I've got my keyboard nearby and my iPad. And not to just like totally just start jumping into how we make our music and like skip over any other questions you're asking, but like a big part of this project that we're going to talk about today is I'm like a normal 9-to-5 guy who has, tapped back into my inner 19-year-old punk rocker and with the assistance of seasoned veteran punk rocker Scotty Sandwich, I've been able to produce a couple of EPs that I think are pretty good and legitimate punk rock. So I have a normal daytime like 9-to-5 job, but thanks to the pandemic, it's become like a fully remote thing. And it's not even like sneaking around the boss or anything to say that I'm working on music while I'm at home. I've got the time to be doing that. So that's kind of part of the story here.
Yeah, and that's kind of the dream. I know, me, the three of us have had a long going group chat going for a while, and finally I was like, let's just do a podcast. But one of the things that jumped out at me was this Worthington's Law thing, and I've been doing this podcast off and on since I was in, it started as a zine, became a podcast, went away for a long time, and now it's back. But very much the same thing as you, is during the pandemic, I was a restaurant manager and I fucking was miserable. And I was like, what do I actually really want to do? And I wrote a list, and on there was like, I just want to fucking interview people. It's just writing about music and doing stuff, but it feels kind of silly at this age. I just turned 40. How old are you guys? Are we all 40?
I just turned 41 last week.
Fucking old.
And I'm 42.
Oh, sweet. So we're all about the same age, and it's so interesting to like be jumping back into the stuff that, I mean, Scotty, I know you never left, but for guys like me and Nick to come back and like be like, well, I don't care if I make it. I just want to like make it as far as success. What depends on your version of success. Too much coffee, too much weed. I'm already talking in circles, but like, I don't care about like becoming a rocks famous interview person anymore, like I used to. And I pretty sure.
I think Nick can tell you more about that, but I know one thing I've always said, you know, once we got, the drummer that plays with us, I think after the first practice, we talked about how it's, you know, for people who aren't into like sports and shit, like finding guy friends is like hard at our age.
Yeah.
Unless it's people who are into shows and stuff. But even that is like, oh, the only time you hang out with people are at shows. So having something that like, you know, once a month we can get together and come to the studio and just, you know, practice. So eventually one day we'll play a show. It has that, you know, thing just to give us something to do instead of like, oh, you know, like, I mean, I'm a huge baseball fan, but you know, outside of that, like, I don't have no one in North Carolina likes baseball. I do have a baseball team, you know, I can't just go to a bar like I do in Chicago and watch Cubs game, you know? I'll let Nick talk more about that, but I know for me, just like being able to have that one day or 2 days a month where we all get together and jam, it's like, such a cool thing just to spend time with people who are like same age, like minded, but also like, as you know, like I've been in tons of bands and stuff like that. It's nice not to have the pressure of, oh my God, let's get this together so we can go on tour and, you know, do this, do that. Yeah. It's like, no, I just want to jam with friends and have fun and make jokes and I'll get drunk and they can smoke weed or whatever, you know, like it's fun for everybody just to like, we're just here, you know?
So Nick, the pandemic hit and you started taking these songs a little more seriously. Tell us a little bit more about how you and Scotty got together and started, you know, making this thing happen, Worthington's Law.
Yeah. So what started it was, so the last time I was in a band was 20 years ago. It was when I was in college and I was in a punk rock band and I'm still really good friends with, probably all the guys actually, from the band, but, my bassist in particular, and he started writing punk songs and was like, hey man, can you help me write lyrics for these? And I just had a lot of fun doing that exercise and was like, oh, I gotta write my own stuff. I want to like keep making music. And so, man, this is like, I don't know, either the punkest thing ever or the least punk thing ever, but I figured out how on my iPad I can use virtual instruments to start writing songs as these like demos, using MIDI instruments that, you know, sound enough like I could give it to somebody like Scotty and say like, hey, this is what I'm going for. And so I came up with a song that I called Gaga for MAGA, because it was leading up to the 2020 election. So that was very front and center on our minds was, you know, MAGA and all that business. And so I wrote this kind of funny song. I found a dude on the internet who was like, I can produce songs in any punk style from from Blink-182 to, you know, I don't know, some other like, I don't know, pop punk band I've probably never heard of.
That was not me, by the way.
Yeah, this wasn't Scotty. So I contacted this dude, sent him a couple files. My friend Chris played guitar for me and we made the song, and my friend Vinny, I guess, shared it with Scotty, or somehow Scotty heard this song and liked it enough that when the opportunity came up to do a cover song for an MU330 tribute, Scotty asked Vinny to, hey, ask your friend Nick if he wants to do a song for this. And I was so delighted because, you know, I'll admit the scene that I grew up in was more of a ska punk scene than straight up like punk rock or hardcore. And so MU330, I just like jumped on that opportunity. So that was the first time I ever worked with Scotty. I used my iPad and my GarageBand for iPad, put together a little, you know, like four or five different tracks. Try to come up with like how to do a ska beat on an iPad, but sent it to Scotty, and immediately, you know, this dude that I had just met was like, oh yeah, I hear what you're going for here. Like there's a little like Elvis Costello vibe here and a little bomb the music industry. And I was like, oh my God, this guy like gets it. And so yeah, that we recorded that and I snuck in another song. I got another song out of Scotty called Spousage, which was our like 30-second song about living with other people and them talking to you from other rooms. And that the whole process was just so fun and like encouraging that I asked Scotty, like, hey man, if I keep writing songs, like, can I make an EP where you and Vinny play the instruments? Cause I can't really play that well, but I want to keep writing songs and doing this. It feels really fun and good. And so, yeah, we've kept doing it and it's like led to other opportunities and we're still doing it. We're recording again this coming weekend and still doing it the same way. I send over GarageBand files to Scotty and I'm like, this is kind of how I want it to sound, but I don't know how to do this on a MIDI guitar, but maybe you can make it sound cool.
Scotty, what did you hear in Nick? Like, how did you've done Death of False Hope Records. You've worked in the behind the scenes for years. You've been in many, many bands. What about Nick jumped out at you and was special about the work that he was putting out there?
Well, so for the MVP very comp, I just want, I just wanted money. And then he came in and he paid me and then we had a really good time. And I think he wore a Steak and Pickle shirt. I even texted Mike Park a picture or something that day. But then afterwards, and then when you saw against Spouses, I'm like, okay, no, this is actually really cool. Cause I listened to, Gaga for Maga. I was like, it's cool. But like, it was great for what it is. But like you said, it was kind of like, you know, you had the idea, but it wasn't fully envisioned from the other's perspective. But then when me and Vinny worked on Spouses, it was like, okay, no, this is really cool. Like I get this. And also me and my wife do the same thing. I yell at her all the time because of it. and then, you know, just that, after that first session, you know, we got along well. And then, you know, like having, you know, like I do a lot of work with just, you know, singer songwriters, stuff like that, who just send me GarageBand stuff in a similar way. Like, you know, they'll send me an acoustic guitar track and a vocal, which I have to somehow realize is a full arrangement where it's with Nick and Trey. Cause he's like, cool, here's what I want. Make it not sound like a computer. we'll talk about like drum fills or a different drum beat here, or, hey, like that bass line is really cool, but a normal bass player is never going to be able to play that, you know?
Right.
Just little things like that. But, you know, like Nick obviously knows all the theory behind what he's doing. It's not just he's like, you know, hitting something and be like, cool, like do all the work, you know? Like there's, you know, he obviously, you know, like, I mean, he's thrown me some fucking minor chords that I've like in a place I wouldn't expect it, but it works so well, you know? Like it's obviously, you know, I know you had some sort of, was it tuba or something? I know it's a horn instrument.
I was in high school band and I took AP music theory, but when I graduated high school, I quit doing symphonic band to try to do punk rock, and I never actually learned guitar along the way. But
the thing is, you still learn the music theory part of it, which is like what makes it nice. It's like, you know, I think at one point you're like, hey, like that should be a minor diminished chord, not just a minor. I'm like, what the right. fuck? What the fuck did minor, like, what's a minor diminished chord? Isn't it already diminished by being minor? Like,
we want it to sound more melancholy. So,
yeah. I would just, you know, like, but yeah, basically it was just like, to answer your question, as you know, Damien, I fucking sure. just ramble all the time. what attracted me to the project overall was, like, it was like funny. It was funny, relevant lyrics to kind of what was going on in my life with someone who has the ability to, even though the maybe the idea is not completely 1000% focused, he knows what he wants. And so it's really easy to communicate and make it really fast. And, you know, he's already been great at like his home recording stuff. I think the last record or last EP we did, I think we only re-recorded like maybe like 3 or 4 vocal tracks here, but like otherwise he had such a great, you know, from his demos, like recorded so well in his house that we just had to touch up a few things. So it makes it like that much easier when we get together to like finish out the songs. And, you know, I kind of work ahead of time before he comes, where it's like, once he sends me the songs, I'll go and, you know, redo the drum, you know, make the drum sound, you know, like a drummer, and then I'll go and play, you know, all the guitars, all the bass. And then when he comes in, we just talk about like, hey, let's put a solo here. There's one song where it's like, and granted, you know, like I'm a drunk, so I'm like, hey, I have this idea for the guitar solo. We'd sit there for like, you know, 20 minutes and I would just loop it and I'd be like, I kind of like that. And then I'm like, yeah, no. And then we go outside and I take a shot and smoke a cigarette and come back in and it's like rip a slash. He's like, that's what you need to do right there, you know? We kind of just get to the point where when we actually get into the studio, 90% of the stuff's done. So we can just focus on those little, like, I like to, I learned from my friends in Old Heavy Hands, we call them diamonds. It's the thing that makes the song just really pop, you know? So like, you know, an extra guitar over a chorus or like, you know, at the end of the Sweetness, we're at Jimmy Road, where like there's just a one key piano going, it's just one note, but that kills that last chord. That's so great. And it's such a little thing, but that's like, that's what we talk about when we get to the point we actually get to the studio, which makes it so much fun because we don't have to deal with all the shit that it takes to make a song when a band's in the studio, where it's like, I have to listen to fucking five different members fight for 20 minutes over a drum fill, you know?
That's pretty cool. Like, so you guys immediately, it's gotta be refreshing. Like you were saying, it's kind of hard at 40 something years old to make friends. It's gotta be refreshing to meet this person, just immediately be speaking the same language and find you have a lot of the same instincts.
Yeah. I mean, from my perspective, for sure. Like just the fact that like he immediately, you know, yeah, we're like the same age. So he gets all the references I'm going for. And yeah, I never thought of making friends in my 40s, like making not just friends, but like, yeah, these like really meaningful friends. Like, you know, obviously like the music's a huge part of our friendship here, but, you know, we've become friends in this process as well. And that's cool. Yeah, it's kind of special. And I think it kind of took the pandemic to, you know, a lot of, I listen to a lot of podcasts, you know, and a theme that comes up a lot is just like, you know, the focus on your priorities and stuff that kind of the isolation of the pandemic has sort of allowed for. And I've always been somebody who like has like artistic tendencies, but I've had trouble like crossing the finish line with whatever I'm doing. And so having Scotty as a collaborator in this has been like, you know, I think I've told you this, Scotty, like, you know, but it's really meaningful to me. To have somebody that can help realize the vision or the art or whatever. And also to have a little bit of accountability too.
I definitely understand that. Both of you guys know this, but for anybody listening who doesn't, you know, me and my girlfriend just moved to Napa from Denver, Colorado, and I'm trying to figure out what the fuck I'm doing here with my life. And, yeah. And part of the same time is like, I started interviewing bands again. I've started writing again. I'm working in a music venue again. The one thing that I really need is I've always done this kind of stuff on my own. I've never had collaborators. And if I do have collaborators, I usually do everything. So with my girlfriend, I've just asked her, I'm just like, hey, will you hold me accountable? Will you make sure I finish things? Will you, you know, it's been real nice to have just somebody to bounce ideas off of in such a comforting collaborative way. Is it kind of like that with Scotty? Do you guys like have a good relationship where it sounds like you guys do?
I don't know where I'm going
with that rambling.
Well, if you live in Napa, you have probably the best job opportunity. What size shoe do you wear?
Size 12.
Cool. Just fucking go to one of those vineyards and fucking just stomp on grapes like they do in The Simpsons.
That's. I wish it was.
I've got to assume that's how that's how wine's made, right? Because like I only saw it in The Simpsons, so I assume that's how it works.
There actually is a couple wineries that do have like kid stomp contests and stuff, but I think it's all mechanical now.
Goddamn robots.
So like all through my. Well, that's not entirely true. I was going to say all through my 20s, like any kind of like artistic project or thing I was doing was like a solo endeavor. That's not entirely true because it's actually improv comedy was something that I did a long time. And that was like a really big part of my life for 10 years. And that's totally collaborative. So, but actually now that I'm saying that out loud, like, so the thing that things that I've seemed to achieve at more are things that involve other people. Looking back now, yeah, now that I'm 42 and like, I can see like 20 years of like, I'm going to be a video guy. I'm going to be a novelist. I'm going to be a children's book writer.
Is my dream journal, is my bucket list here? Can you see that? Just describing all the same shit I want to do. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Well, with any of those things, though, it was just me like committing to do it, waking up early, doing it. But then the first time I hit any kind of wall, which often came in the form of like critical feedback, I would just shut down and be like, oh, they're right. I shouldn't. Well, why am I even writing? What's so different about this and like special about it to me is that like I can send Scotty a song, and even if he's not 100% into it, or even if he thinks there's like issues with it, he gets what I'm going for. And like, I know that like with his help, we're going to get it right. And this song idea I had will become a recording. It's so, it feels really freeing to me, and just super valuable to, I don't know, to have that kind of like support. And what's unique about it is that Scotty gives me totally complimentary skills that I don't have. And so, you know, oftentimes I think, yeah, I was drawn to the kind of like one man artwork because I don't know, I can write a novel by myself. I don't need anybody to do this shit. Like, but like, I can't make a record by myself. And I really desperately want to, and it feels really satisfying to do that.
Let me ask you this, Nick, did you ever find that people underestimated you a lot growing up? Cause it was that way for me. That's why I've always taken on these projects by myself, is cause like people have looked at me and been like, I don't think you can do that. Things.
I had almost like the opposite thing. My mom was like, she thought I could do anything I wanted to, but didn't know how to actually like support that. And it was always like in the sense of comparing it to other people. So like, if we see that, like, I don't know, my friend got a cool job, well, you could do that too, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Like, instead of like, hey, well,
it's Catholic guilt.
Yeah.
Why can't you be more like Jimmy down the street?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, she, in one, you know, one corner of the mouth is like, you can totally do this. Why aren't, in the other corner of the mouth is, why aren't you already successful at that? Yeah. And so I had this idea in my head, like up until I was 40, I guess, that's like, yeah, why aren't you like already successful at name any endeavor?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think I would hate that way worse. So I got the like no support, like when I was like bad in school, or like, you know, bad student school, like my parents thing were like, you know, my punishment was like take away my guitar and shit like that, and like, you're never gonna make it in music, blah blah. So I lived my whole life out of spite. And like, you know, and it worked, you know, between the, like, you know, doing the like the festivals and the label and working with fucking Nikki Sixx, and like, it's so funny. Every time my dad comes to my house, like, I love my, like, me and my dad have had problems in the past, but every time he comes to the house, I can see resentment, because at, you know, like, he was pretty well, like, he was upper middle class when we were growing up, and he just made tons of terrible life decisions. And I can, every time he comes over, I can just see the like resentment in his face when he's like, fuck, he did it. Like, he did it with only doing music. I told him I was fucking 8 that I was gonna do music. He didn't believe me. Told him again when I was 16 I was gonna do music. Told him again, I was 18 I was gonna do music. And I'm gonna like, man, like, I never said I'd be a rock star. I've loved the like the science and the art form of the mixing and, you know, audio production side of stuff since I knew what a 4-track cassette recorder was, you know. So I like for me, I was just, my whole life has been fueled by that spite of, you can't do it. So I can, and now, without being a dickhead to him, like, he lives in a trailer, and I, you know, Nick's in our house, and I can be like, oh my God, I'm fucking all, you know, like, like, I have 3 floors in my house with the whole basement, the fucking recording studio with a 98 inch fucking TV.
Yeah.
Like,
you live in punk rock Wonka land.
Yeah.
So how did you get to that place of success, Scotty? How did you decide to never quit along the ways? Because I know you've had ups and downs like the rest of us, but here you are still plugging away at music, still making a living at it. Whereas, like, you know, some of us quit a few years ago and are starting over again, so to speak.
I'm an alcoholic, so I'm unhireable. So I just got really good at my craft. I learned that if I want to drink on the job, I can just become a sound person. And so I became, you know, I was a production manager at Motorco for 10 years. And then I got tired of working there, but luckily they paid me enough that I was, the whole time I was there, I was making up money When I wasn't spending it on paying bands, like that's False Hope Fest, I decided to put some money aside, and that, like, I decided the studio was the next part. You know, like I met you, through Death of All Soap Records and then Fest. Obviously, the record side had no money, and even the Fest had no money in it. Just something I love doing. And once, you know, I was doing the label before Bandcamp and Spotify became such a nationally, when Death of All Soap Records started, there wasn't Bandcamp. So that's why I did that and try to find bands and get them noticed the way they got noticed, you know. But then when that became a thing, it was like, cool. So what's the next thing I do to help get bands noticed? Is like, I love recording. Let's make it a studio that's affordable for bands to come to, that has the same gear as maybe, you know, one of these bigger studios. You know, like I don't have as much nice gear as the Blasting Room, but sonic quality wise, I'm like, if they're 100% the best sounding studio in punk rock, I'm like 92%, you know. And I can charge way, 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 way less than what they charge. And I love them. It's just not a diss towards them. But, you know, and at the same time, I told Nick this, and I tell every band I work with, eventually you're going to get big enough that I want you to go to other producers and other studios. You know, it's the same thing I said with Death of All Soap. You know, when I first met Arliss or fucking Mixtapes or Make War or Direct Hit, it's like, yo, like, I want to help you guys, but like the second you guys can jump up to Red Scare or Jumpstart or Fat or, you know, whatever, do it, you know. And yeah, it's, you know, it's the same ideology as Death of All Soap Records, but just in a studio. And I only charge because I need to pay for all the gear
and rent, you know, or mortgage, I guess, right?
Yeah, mortgage. Man, luckily, my wife has a good job. So
yeah, that's very nice. I'm very lucky that right now, while I'm looking for a better job, my girlfriend's like, she's taking care of me while I'm out here doing these little Zoom interviews, and I love and appreciate her. She will listen to this. So
my wife is the same way. When I first moved to Durham, when I first started doing all that, you know, because me and her dated for about a good year before Motorco opened. And the first year that me and her were dating, I was trying to do freelance writing. I did some, sync. I did a couple sync stuff for commercials, and that's about it. Yeah. Maybe one a year. So, and she put up with all that shit, but she knew I was passionate enough that she believed in what the ultimate dream was.
Yeah. It's actually like really nice, because I've never dated anybody like that, and it's really bizarre to be with somebody who believes in me. And I'm sure like friends will be like, motherfucker, I believed in you too, but it's just such a different,
but different way. It's different when it's a partner, you know, like this is someone you're sharing every, you know, your friends can support you, but they're not with you, you know, 24/7, or, you know, like, you know, my wife goes to work, but I, you know, and stuff like that. But like, it's different than like when I see, you know, a band member, you know, like they can say they support me all they want, but this is the person that'll live with me. They're the person I fucking fart at when I'm in bed in the middle of the night, you know. Yeah. They have to put up with all that stuff.
All right. Nick, I know you're married. We could talk about relationships, but I had a thought that I don't want to forget that Scotty brought up. Scotty, I was asking, you know, what helped make you successful, and you just listed all these ways that you built community. And that's the thing that I've noticed. Like, I've got buddies like in Colorado Springs, my buddies Brian and Sean Ostra, who I don't expect you two to know, but they become successful because they built a sense of community around them. Scotty, you've built a sense of community around them. Like, how did you figure out that you needed this community? I don't know. More and more, I keep looking around like Napa, and I'm like, oh, people keep telling me, oh, that kind of stuff doesn't happen here. That doesn't work here. And I'm like, oh, of course it doesn't. There's no community here. So I guess what I'm getting at is like, how did you guys find it? I don't know. Let's talk community. I don't know. Let's just see where my rambling can get us from there.
Dick, I'll let you go, but let me just do one thing real quick. For me, like, when I first moved to Durham, there was no punk scene the way that we do punk rock. When I first went to North Carolina, all the shows and shit and that I saw or went to was all like these like street punk oil shit, but since it's North Carolina, it was veiled in white supremacy and we're sharp. Like, cool, you're sharp. You're still a skinhead that wants to fight. You just want to fight other skins, which is fine, but you're still fucking dude that wants to fight. Growing up in Chicago, I came from, all the shot, the Broadways and the Ghosts are my favorite bands, but also through that community in Chicago, I was heavily into ARA and, Food Not Bombs and all those things. So, I grew up listening to 15 and Propaganda and Broadways and, all that, whatever you want to call it. Like, I guess now it's like super PC punk or, that's just funny because at this point it's even further. It's not even like, it's like only half of what, it's half of what's going on now. But, so I was like, this is not a scene I'm any part of. So I just started booking bands and just any place. I was go to bars and, I drank there enough. I was like, hey, do you mind if I put the show on, And the bar's like, cool. You bring your PA and, if you get a door person, you can charge whatever you want. Like, we keep the bar, you keep the door. I'm like, cool. So then I just started bringing bands here. And luckily at the same time, Jason Huggins, who did Radfest, was doing the same thing down in Wilmington. And so me and him both wanted to bring the same type of bands here. Cause at the time, at the time we were bringing like Latterman and, both of us booked the first two, North Carolina Menzinger shows and, Capital was sinking down right before and, early Red City Rail, Arl Sanson played their first North Carolina show at a bar down the street from me. And they got, I did the whole story for that for later on. I'm just going to book the shows. It was like a field of dreams. If you build it, it'll come. And guess what? There was a bunch of like college kids. Cause where I was booking shows in Durham, there's fucking Duke and UNC within fucking, obviously Duke kids were right there. UNC is 15 minutes away. And NC State's only about a 25 minute drive. So all these kids who were, at the time I was 28. So these kids are, 18, 21 who were listening to the same punk rock as I was. We're like, oh shit, someone's bringing these bands to town. We're going to go. Because no one else was. And that was I was like, if no one else can do it, I'm going to do it. It's like that, you watch anytime you hear Ian McKay talk about anything, no one else is, so might as well do it. But it might be different for Nick, but that was, for me, that was all I was trying to do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would just say that, like, the same energy that Scotty's talking about and the same, fertile ground for those kind of scenes is the reason that I'm here, not specifically for punk, because when I moved here the first this is actually like the second time I've been in North Carolina. I'm from the DC suburbs of Virginia originally, but I moved down here in 2005, and part of it was I moved to Carrboro, which is right next to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and it's home to the Cat's Cradle, which is a pretty well-known indie rock club. And so I wanted to live in a place where I could walk to an indie club. That's actually why I moved to Carrboro, because of that club. And when I got there, I found an improv theater that a dude from UNC had started, and he had just opened his own theater. And there was a small community there of people who were like me, who were funny and into theater and performing and stuff. And so I did, improv for 2 years in Carrboro, moved to New York to actually try to pursue. I didn't have a definition. And this is actually one of my examples of a dream that I didn't see through all the way, but I moved to New York to do improv at UCB, the Upper Citizens Brigade. I took 3 levels of classes. While I was there, I met my wife in one of my classes. And so I started falling in love with her and dating and stuff. And I didn't want to be in New York anymore. I wanted to just come back to North Carolina. I had only been here for 2 years. I just knew this was a special place. All my old improv friends were still here. So I still knew creative people. I'd be able to get a job. My wife's a textiles artist. So there's somewhat a textile industry in North Carolina, at least more here than any other place. We moved down here because I already had a baked in community in this through this improv comedy stuff. And in fact, the dude who introduced me to Scotty was an improviser as well. I graduated college in Virginia, and I was just living in my college town, and a friend of mine had moved down to Durham, and this book had come out at that time called The Rise of the Creative Class. And it was talking about areas where certain types of mostly white collar type jobs, but also the arts, I guess, tech jobs, things like that were thriving. And Raleigh Durham was like high up on the list. So, and it's proved out to be the case. Like I'm now, you know, it's now 17 years since the first time I moved here. And now I've been here for 11 and a half years straight. I've only seen it build. I've seen scenes like the one that, you know, Scotty kind of helps stoke grow. I've seen new improv scenes grow. The arts, yeah, it's a really cool place. And there seems to be like an appetite for kind of whatever you got and then support for that as well.
I think people get introduced for a reason, you know?
Yeah.
And so even though Vinny's not working with us anymore, you know, me and you would have never met if it was not for you coming back in and doing that improv troupe with him, which then led to us meeting and then, you know, us doing this.
And honestly, in 2005, when I started doing improv, I wasn't as into punk rock as I was, say, like 5 years earlier. But the DIY ethic and the energy of it was something that like really stuck with me as I did improv. I tried to like do punk rock improv for whatever that meant, like, you know, kind of fast and like authentic, relentless. I don't know exactly where I was going with that, but to kind of to Scotty's point, there's a lot of these connections here between the comedy background and our connection to each other and just this whole sense of like, creative.
When I get two more vodkas in me, your last question at the end of the interview should just be like giving him a topic and I'm gonna see if I can improv alongside of great.
Okay. All right.
I'm down to try. I've never done improv. This is gonna be the Scotty Sandwich introduction to improv.
Nick, you quit doing music for a while. What was it like using these creative outlets again?
It felt really natural, actually. I've always been a musical person, and man, it's, you know, they say you like regret the things you don't do more than the things you did do. I really wish I had gotten over the difficulties of learning instruments again. I was a really good tubist because I started when I was 12 years old. And, you know, if I wanted a good grade, I had to practice and like learn how to do it. I bought my first guitar when I was 20, and I already had this idea in my head that like, I'm too old. I should have already learned how to play guitar. And this is hard.
You fucked up right there, Nick. If you can play a tuba, just get a bass guitar because it's the same fucking clef.
I know. I fucked up already. I know.
No, just be a bass player.
Play guitar. So.
Well, the beating bass player, I don't know if you ever heard of this band called the Ramones. They're really good. and they influence a lot of what we listen to. But they have this awesome bass player called Didi. His name was Didi. And he just goes 1, 2, 3, 4, yells it. And then he just strums twice as fast on like one string. He just changes one note. And then it's great.
I know.
And then it only changes three times in every song. It's great. It's super simple.
And people still play like that today.
Yeah. Nothing's changed.
I've never stopped creating. Like I did video for a long time. You know, I did the improv stuff. I wrote fiction. So it felt pretty natural. The only difference was having to apply it to song structures and to start thinking about more than just like the words, you know, start thinking about like musical dynamics and things like that. The one thing that I always beat myself up over, which you might be able to relate to, Damien, is just this like a lack of stick-to-it-ness. So like, I just, you know, I do something for a year, give up, or, you know, jump to the next thing. But if you can find like whatever the thread is through what, you know, all of those things are, for me, it was storytelling.
It's called spite.
Spite, yeah.
And so for me, it's storytelling. And so I'm trying to like, you know, use the energy and the art of punk rock to just tell stories that and connect to other people through them.
I totally get that. And then like, I have really bad ADD, and then I've just kind of learned to stop fighting it. Instead, I lean into it and I'm like, this is the thing I'm really into today. So I just try not to force it and try to lean into those ADD moments. And it seems to actually be working counterintuitively. Yeah. So
they can tell you all about my ADD at the studio.
Oh man, I believe it.
Yeah. Well, if you ever want to watch whatever YouTube clip Scotty has recently watched, you'll be sure to see that. And you know, check out other projects, you know, music he's been listening to.
Yeah.
It's all helpful. It all sets the mood. It becomes part of the tapestry of the.
Oh, you can be a dick. No, there's times where like I'll be like, hey, I want to do this guitar solo, but I can't do it. Watch, because this is what I want to do. And I'm like, well, then I'll make him watch like 10 minutes of like Slash being drunk guitar videos.
Well, I actually came up with an idea based on that one. So he, at our last band practice, he wanted to show us Slash playing a solo and having somebody come up and put his cigarette in his mouth for him while he was playing a lit cigarette in his mouth. And I was thinking we have to make a video like that where Scotty's playing and I like come and just feed you an entire meal while you're playing, just like goodness. Bite by bite, I like, just give you some pie, just and then after the cigarette afterwards, of course.
Yeah.
I do love the band videos. How do you come up with them? Is it just, you know, what's going to be the most fun?
Well, it's a combination. Like, so the very first one, Spousage, which is that 30-second song, yeah. I knew exactly like what it had to be, and Vinny was nice enough to not just act it out but just really like live the character of that video. But then after that, I felt like I didn't want to run into what I had run into before with like trying to be a video maker, which is if I don't have enough people to help me, this is going to be really a lot of work and I'm going to give up on it. I found
I understand that
language. Yeah.
Oh man, best friends forever now.
Yeah, dude. But we're too old for that. We have to be compassionate with ourselves and like, you know, find the things that make it easier for ourselves. So one of which for me was having to trust other people to like outsource videos to. And so luckily on Fiverr, I found these kids. I say kids because I think they're like in their early 20s from Italy. We just had a really charming reel and like a super cheap price for video. And so I was like, I'll give these guys a shot. I just want more. I need more content to like promote my music. And so they made one video for me and I had very, very low expectations. And it was just so like cute and charming and funny. And that one's called Going on a Walk. It wasn't like what I had pictured, but like once I got over that, I was like, okay, I have a video for this song. I have like a platform for people to listen to the song. And it's something that like, I'm not embarrassed by, or that I think it's actually pretty good. And so we did this Christmas song last year and I had the same guys do it and they just like hit it out of the park. I just gave them kind of a suggestion to run with of Santa Claus taking a day off and getting spotted in the pub or whatever. And because they had, you know, the right amount of people to do it, they were able to quickly put something together for us. Now, since then, I had a bad experience on Fiverr. And I've always been warned by other creatives not to use Fiverr for this reason. But I needed a video. My Italian friends were not available. I didn't have the time or the resources, so I thought to make something. And so I found somebody to do like a lyrics video, like the, I don't know if you saw the A Wilhelm Scream video for Be One to Know One, but it's this really great like animated lyrics video. And I showed it to this guy and I was like, can you do something like these? That he's like, absolutely, my friend. I'll get back to you in 3 weeks. And so I don't hear from him at all in 3 weeks. And he gives me back essentially just like animated clip art that has nothing to do with the lyrics of my song. And I'm just like, oh no, what am I going to do? And so I felt really awful for spending my family's money on this like piece of shit that I just wanted to bury. I wanted nobody to ever see it. That motivated me to like be resourceful. And I made my own like lyrics and emoji video for that song. And it's cute. It's serviceable, whatever. I was like, we need one more video. I don't want to spend any more money. We're trying to put a band together. We haven't really talked too much about this. Worthington's Law is really, you know, a project more than a band, but we are trying to get a band together because we want to do live shows. And so at one of our band practices, I just set up a camera in the corner and was like, okay, guys, like, are you guys cool if I just record us from a couple different angles? So I did that. And the next Monday, oh, and so Scotty's practice room happens to have a green screen like painted all around it. So I was like, we're going to be in outer space because it's our song about a restaurant in outer space called La Cosa Nova. I happen to have a green screen at home because I have a video background. And so during my workday between calls, I quickly like ran to the closet, put a couple outfits on, set up my green screen, recorded myself lip syncing. And over the course of the next couple of days, like cut together a music video at the same desk I work from. Those came out of necessity, which it's amazing how like, I don't think they're actually any better. Actually, I think it's actually worse than what my Italian film crew provided, but it felt very, very like authentic to me. And like, it had the same aesthetic as our music. I'd like to have more resources. I'd like somebody else to do it for me, but yeah, I try to make, the music is mostly funny. And so I want the videos to also have that kind of aesthetic.
There are a lot of bands that try to be funny. You know, we were all around in the late 90s, early 2000s after Blink exploded.
Yeah.
You guys actually do a really great job, Nick. Like these are real fun, relatable songs. Like again, Hyper and High, I'm Going for a Walk, the Circle Jerk song, like real identifiable stuff. But how do you make it funny?
This is going to sound so pretentious, but this is my perspective. You know, I love writing. I know you just like discovered George Saunders recently, right?
I did. Yes. Thanks to you.
Yeah. Well, I think you had already like asked about, I might've like just chimed in or something, but happy to share the love. So he's an author who very much like Kurt Vonnegut, like finds like the, I don't know what the most interesting things in like the mundane, but then can also like apply like just a touch of magic to like a scenario. Like it's like sci-fi, but not for nerds, you know. Anything I've ever created myself, like if I look at my old videos or stuff, I always like try to go for that kind of same like level of artifice. Like this isn't real. So with the music for the first EP, especially, like it was coming from like my real experiences, like the mundane bullshit of like going for a walk, but having a dog and like a baby and all this like stuff. But like really like doing it as a character, like who would be so funny to do it? And I just try to like imagine like a really like hardcore guy, like doing, you know, punk guy doing this. Like, how is that funny? I think just I love contrasts. And so the contrast of like a real tough, like, gang vocals. But I'm talking about like, I'm walking on memory foam because my feet hurt. That to me is funny. And Hyper and High is funny because I'm not celebrating like the party lifestyle. I'm celebrating productivity, which I can do because I smoke weed and drink a lot of coffee rather than like getting drunk. That's the first album was very much that kind of like, or EP was that was like the focus and the approach. For the second one, as I was writing, I was going through a lot of stuff with my mom. So I grew up in this really like religious background, and my mom is like more than ever dug into her beliefs, and they've become just so like weird and like fantastic and just like her own, you know, version of Christianity really. And so we're having a lot of issues over like the whole vaccine thing. And I have a 5-year-old son, and like, you know, I wanted to make sure that either he or she could get vaccinated before they saw each other. And anyway, I couldn't help but like write about that as it was going on. And so there are a couple songs on the newer EP that are like, to me at least, very serious. But even in those, with the language choices I make, I try to like choose funny or like pedestrian language, you know, referring to God as an old dude in heaven, you know, things like that. But Scotty gave me a real gift in this last EP, which was, I don't know, you woke up with this idea or whatever, but he just like texted me like, La Cosa Nova, a restaurant opened by the mob in outer space to serve billionaires like in their space flights. And I was like, huh, that's got like a Kurt Vonnegut kind of feel to it. There's something like so funny and specific about that. And so I was like, okay, I want to write that I want to write that song and figure that song out. And so what that allowed me to do was like stop thinking, like just writing more songs about myself and about my own like specific experience and hoping that it's relatable to other people, and just actually do something totally different, which is like write a piece of fiction as music. We're actually working on 3 new songs right now. At least one of them is like very much not about myself. And I want to just try to keep like telling short pieces of fiction in music that are hopefully funny either because of their funny scenarios or because of the kind of word choice I use, or sonically, maybe there's something going on that's like kind of funny. I'm rambling a little bit. I get a little uncomfortable talking about myself. Like,
No, it's real. Like, I'm sitting here listening to this and I'm like, you guys, like, we're all very similar people with very similar creative tendencies. It sucks we're on two different coasts, because, man, I would love to be a part of some of these games and things, and being surrounded by people who are just so like, oh, you want to start a fake band? Cool. I will play and record it. Like, I'm very jealous of you guys. And
not a fake band. It's a real band. We've had three practices. We have had three practices, Damien. Don't you criticize us.
But didn't it start out kind of like a band?
Yeah.
You know, and now
absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So we've been on this thing for a little over an hour. Let's play a song. We'll get out of here. We'll play a song. What song do you guys want me to play here at the end of this here episode?
It's up to Nick, but after that, I want 2 minutes of me and Nick doing improv. You get to pick the thing.
Okay.
Nick, we'll go first. Okay. I want to try improv. I've never tried improv. I want to do it. But yeah, it's up to Nick.
As far as song goes, I think In Love With a Nun, it would be a fun one. From the new EP, that's one that's definitely, it's not about myself.
I love that song too. So I have a huge infatuation with Brian Baker's guitar playing, and so I went straight, because when I heard your harmonies on that, I was like, it's gotta be a Bad Religion song. So like, I need all my Brian Baker shit on this song.
It is explicitly me trying to write a Bad Religion song. Yeah. I'll tell a quick story about it. It's about I saw a documentary on HBO about a woman who left a life of stardom in Hollywood in like the 50s to go be a nun. One like small minor character in it, but who really stood out to me, was this guy who had dated her back when they were in their 20s, who continued to come visit her up at the Abbey. And it was like the most heartbreaking shit I had ever, like, just thinking about this poor old, like, dude, she's never going to be with you. Like, stop it. And so that's what In Love With a Nun is about.
Songs playing, right? Yeah. Cool. So, back from the break. Hey, Sounds, we're back from listening to I'm in Love with a Nun. We're going to close out this mostly harmless podcast, but I've never done improv. And since we have Nick here, who is a improv person, I want to try it. So, I'll let you be the, I guess there's like, you're the, I know there's like, usually there's usually more than two people on a stage when an improv thing happens, right?
Yeah. So I think something to keep it structured would be to actually play like a short form improv game. And so I think we should play the game of questions, which is that you and I can only ask each other questions in response to each other.
So you ask me a question, but then I question you back.
Yeah.
So exactly. I don't answer. I just
and if you answer, you lose. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So what do you think about that, Damien?
Yeah, that sounds great. Whatever you guys want to do.
So Damien, all right, as a topic, this would be like, I'm getting improv mode here. All right.
You got to give him a topic. Does he give the topic and then we ask questions?
Give us a topic of a place that could fit inside the room you're in right now.
A place that, a taco truck.
Taco truck. Would you like a taco?
I would prefer a burrito.
And that's how we play questions.
God damn it, I don't want to get a better game. I got a better game. Hey, I don't know. Do a new one. Let me start over. Now I know we're doing. Do the same thing.
All right, you ask me a question first.
Okay. No. Like, go ahead, Damien. Damien's gonna ask. Like, he's the crowd. Like, tell him. Like, you're like you're a crowd. I get it now. I was dumb. I forgot. I got it. I forgot the rules.
Okay.
What rules?
Fucking day drinking.
And it's like my favorite band.
Damien, as a suggestion, what's the last thing that you lent to somebody?
Money.
Money. Yeah. All right. Our suggestion is money. Scotty, you can take it away.
So I have to ask a question?
To me, and I'll answer in a question. Yeah.
Why do I get paid enough when I record Word News Law?
Why don't you deliver your songs to me a little bit faster?
Why don't you write better songs?
When was the last time you wrote a song?
When was the last time George Bush was in? When was the last time a Bush was in power?
How many Bushes have you voted for?
How many Bushes have you fucked?
And scene.
Beautiful.
Oh, I like improv. I get an improv. I like this.
There you go. Give us a new one. So with like over Zoom.
No, I'll do one more. Just stop it. I'm gonna do one more. I like this.
Questions? All right.
No, Damien, I get it now. Are you supposed to like stop yelling? Be like,
this is
Damien. Question. Go.
You're so loud. You're like yelling into those ear pods.
Doesn't fucking matter. Just fucking pick something. Just say a word.
Oh, I'm picking.
Is Dame
Ford?
All I hear is him yelling.
Just pick a word.
Pick a word. Basketball.
Perfect.
I don't know why. But basketball. There we go.
Why did Jordan? Hey, Nick. Why did Jordan not give Pippen any playing time?
Did you see how shitty Pippen looked the other night?
Damn.
Did you see how good fucking Rodman was every fucking night?
Have you ever seen Rodman have a bad game?
Have you ever seen Rodman without his fucking cock out?
Wouldn't you like to see his cock as well?
I have, because I've seen the Tommy Pamela Anderson documentary.
And that was not a question.
God damn it! Fuck, okay.
All right,
we're good.
That's
a good way to exit.
I'm gonna
that biopic of Tommy and Pammy is awesome.
This is a fun game. I'm gonna take this into the kitchen and annoy my lady with it every single night from now on. Like I love improv games in the kitchen.
Here's a really fun one. If you don't mind.
I mean, I'm not fine. I got nothing else going on.
Go ahead. I can tie it to Worthington's Law. So Worthington's Law is actually, I didn't make up of that phrase. It comes from Mr. Show, which Scotty actually mentioned that he's been watching.
Also, not to interrupt you guys, but someone trolled up, whoever his name on Punk News is Tony_Victory.
Yeah.
Fucking like trolled it. They trolled you. He's like, oh my God. Like, I'm never listening, but I love the name. I love the Kids in the Hall reference name. I was like, but I knew someone fucking with you because. I know it's from Mr. Show, but
oh no, he wrote Mr. Show. Oh.
No. Oh, did you burn? I just wore the Kids in the Hall. It was like, oh, that's the best burn.
Oh no. He said, I'll probably never listen to this, but 5 stars for the Mr. Show reference. So the sketch basically, it's like a made up law, which is more money equals greater than. And so people with more money are the people who should have like the most power or whatever. And that's where the name comes from. Scott Aukerman was like a actor on there and like a writer on there in the last season. He has his own podcast called Comedy Bang Bang, and they play a game on there called what do they call it? I forget.
You should write that down on that notepad of yours over there.
3, 2, 1. I was spending too much time trying to connect it back to Worthington's Law, but basically they count, they say 3, 2, 1, and then two people say a word at the same time, and then you have to keep going until you say the same word. So like I might say apple and Damien might say car. And so we'll think, what's in between apple and car? And maybe next time we'll both say Tesla or something like that. It usually takes more than two steps, right? But
no, that's
Damien. I know you're supposed to do the goodbyes for the podcast. I have one more of them. I'm flirting now, so I know I'm doing good. I know you don't like post videos of this, but I know you still have a video thing on your podcast. Yeah. I'm gonna make Nick take me to like an open night improv thing. I'm gonna go on stage and do improv. And I want this to be when we get the video, I'll make it like an adjunction thing to the podcast. So I'm gonna get I'll get really, 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 really drunk. I'll make Nick drive me to and from my house.
Okay.
I'll fall asleep at his side. No. I'm not allowed to sleep in his house. He's got a kid, so there's like 500-foot radius or something. I'm gonna go do that. I'll do a live one of me trying to do improv. Dave, you can add that on as a task.
Yeah, I mean, all this video is recording. I'm not gonna use it, but you guys can have it to do whatever you want to with it later down the road.
Oh no, I'm going to go. I only want audio. I asked you because I don't want to clean my room because I have a puppy and. Puppy okay. Sleeping.
All right, all right.
Look at how cute that puppy
is.
Cute. Look at that.
So cute.
He's like, I'm sure.
Where's my cutie?
Oh well.
Okay. I want to see your cat. I want to see your pussy. Show me your pussy.
Being lazy.
Show me the pussy.
I gotta go fun.
When you're famous, you can just grab it.
No. All right, guys. I gotta pee. Otherwise, I would sit here and hang out longer, but I gotta pee. But can we do this again sometime soon?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, let's just do it for fun at any point. We love you very much. And thank you for doing that.
Thank you, Damien.
It was fun. So, all right, guys, I'm gonna go pee my pants, but I'll talk to you guys on the internet webs again soon.
Right. You're never too old to dream.
I know. Oh, thanks, man.
Right. Unless you're a tray. No, what's the other one?
All right, bye. All right, love you guys.
See you.